This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hello, I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're tuned into the show that brings you closer to the people and places of our capital city. For some, traveling is an activity that's not limited to just sightseeing and experiencing foreign culture. It's also a process of reflection and understanding, making sense of our differences and contemplating our similarities. Recognizing that, at the end of the day, we share the same world despite some distinct nuances in our stories. That's the aspiration that Musso Trees, an independent, self-published biannual magazine, has as it publishes narratives of people and places all over the world. Based in Kuala Lumpur and yet quite global in its outlook and distribution, Musso Trees makes that bold jump into the world of traditional publication at a time when its relevance has slowly been challenged by digitalization. The editor-in-chief of Musso Trees, Carol Izzuan, joins us to share how his journeys eventually inspired him to start a magazine on travel and destination.
I started travel when I was 23, so along the process, the travel has taught me a lot in terms of how I see the world. So in terms of how do I engage with people and how I try to convey my messages, you know, that kind of thing. Because when you are out there, you actually try to be a better person because you see different thing in life. So because of that, it gives me different types of perspective on how I do this and how I do that. So in order for me to make sure that memory long lasts, I try to convey it in something more tangible. So that's why I try to gather all the contents and the stories, all the experiences that I have into something more tangible, which is the magazine itself.
So how did you decide that, you know, publishing a magazine is the best way to go about it? Especially in a very interesting time where people are beginning to question the relevance of physical magazines.
Yeah, right? Yeah. I've got that question a lot. Like, why you have to start your own magazine? Because people prefer to have digital platform instead. To be frank, it's just my personal preference because I love papers. I love the smell of papers. I love to touch papers. You know, when you go to the old bookstores or vintage bookstores in Paris, or in London, you know, and then you have that kind of smell, you know, the kind of sense of presence of, oh, this is something that I really love. So that's why print is my to-go mode, why I want to start my, I would say, passion and do the magazine itself. So I think there are people who are still reading, you know, they love to have this sense of tangibility. And I think, why not? So yeah, it might be hard and difficult in the first, like, you know, first issue, but I think there's a lot of processes that I've learned throughout the journey, so yeah.
Carol used to be in the corporate world, and he left that behind in order to do this full-time without any prior experience.
I don't have any professional background in any of that field. I mean, in creative industry per se, in terms of like writing or photography or even to publish a magazine. My background was science, but I think because you love to do it so much, you take the opportunity to learn and try to just do it. Because the thing is, you don't have a particular format of doing things. So you tend to be experimental and say, oh, this is going to work if I do this and that. So along the way, if it doesn't work out, then you shouldn't do it again. You know, you find some other solution how to make and execute the process. And then that's how it is. So yeah, I think to me, experience has taught me. So it doesn't matter you don't have the cert of professionally. It doesn't mean that you can't do. It's just a matter of time. Take your time to learn and ask a lot of people. That's quite important. I mean, that's very important to ask a lot of people on how to do it. If you don't find the right person, Google can help you. How to always works. Yeah.
So it is a lot of experimentation as well, right, to a certain extent. And it's not just you. I think you have a team as well, right, with you?
Yeah, we started it out with four friends, basically, who love traveling. And then we thought, hey, let's do something, you know. And then because of that eagerness and that passion, we published the first issue about 3 years ago. So currently, I'm running Musso Trees with another friend. We are now with two teams. So yeah.
Muso Trees, can you maybe tell me a bit more about the name? What was the inspiration behind this name? What does it mean exactly?
Oh, basically, Muso Trees doesn't mean anything. If you go to a dictionary, you couldn't find any word that, you know, tell you what is Muso Trees. It's just a combination of two words, Muso and Trees. Muso is a person who loves music, I've been told. I think it's an Australian accent, but I'm not too sure about it. It's a Muso from music, because I love music so much. When I started Instagram, all my captions are all song, because I do believe that every picture has its own soundtrack. It's kind of like a movie. They have their own soundtrack, right? So it's the same with me. So I think with this picture, it goes with the kind of song. And then trees, because I love to take pictures of trees, nature, and then I just combine that two words and it becomes Muso Trees. And somehow it clicked, you know? And at the end of the day, to me, it doesn't matter what kind of name that you are choosing. It's your responsible to give the characters and giving the charisma of the title that you have chose. So I think Muso Trees sounds just about right.
Unlike the more common magazines, Muso Trees is published biannually. I asked Carol whether there's a specific reason behind that decision.
Well, to be frank, in terms of the cost, the financial background, biannual is the most comfortable or feasible way for me to produce in each issue, because I started the magazine without any fund or loans or anything. It's just your savings, you know, you fuck out your savings and you just want to do things, and then you have to be diligent about your cost, like how many copies that you want to print, you know, and then how often that you want to print it, you know. So to me, biannual, twice a year, is the right time, because I need to identify about the target market, to do the marketing, who buys my magazine and that kind of thing. So I think I feel comfortable with biannual, but who knows, in the future I might increase the frequency to be quarterly maybe. So yeah, it's something that I have to think about throughout the process. So biannual to me currently is just working just fine for me, yeah.
Yeah, I have to clarify this to the listeners out there. It's called a magazine, but it is actually more like a book, right? If you look at it, it's published like a book with a proper spine. And even the quality of it is very, you know, you could say that it's quite upscale, right?
Some people might see it as a coffee table book. Yeah. Some people might see it as a magazine, because to me, that is when the target readers come. Like, some target readers see it as a magazine, especially the millennials, because people wouldn't really understand what is this independent publication, why is it so different from the mainstream magazine that we have on the shelf. So like, our parent might see it as a collectible things or coffee table book, so they might rather just calling it as a book. So I think because my target audience is more millennials and you know, hipsters, coffee cultures, and that kind of people in the range age of 20 to 35 or 40. So when I say magazine, they just instantly know, okay, this is the vibes that I'm getting. But along the process, it's fine if people want to call it as a book, because it comes by volume, so it might as well be a book, you know, like you said, with the perfect binding, with a very hard cover, and so the material is quite heavy as well to be called as magazine. So I don't blame people want to call it as a book as well.
And there is that a sort of like class and stature to it as well, if you look at it, right? It's not just, yes, it talks about traveling, but it doesn't talk about traveling in a trivial way. It talks about traveling in a more in-depth way, right?
Yeah. That is why when publish every issue, they have a theme for it. Like for the first issue, we have introductory volume. And then the second one, inexperience. The third one is enterprise. The fourth one is home. And the latest one is chemistry issue. So I try to work within that theme, but still talking about travel, you know. So within that kind of theme, it makes the magazine has direction. And also, I'm very particular about design. I'm very particular about what kind of story that I want to portray and share with people. So that makes Muso Trees.
That was Carol Izzuan, editor-in-chief of Muso Trees, a biannual independent magazine that captures the more layered essence of travelling. We're going for a short break, so stay tuned. I'm Hanif Baharuddin, and you're listening to I Love KL on BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9, you're listening to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. I'm Hanif Baharudin, and this week I'm joined by Carol Izzuan. He's the editor-in-chief of Muso Trees, an independent magazine that has a more nuanced take on travel and destination. Muso Trees has published 5 volumes so far, and because Carol adopted a more experimental approach to his work, we wonder how much the magazine has progressed since.
A lot of things, especially in terms of the content creation, how do I select the content and whatnot. So initially, yes, it's about travel, but now I'm trying to be more experimental, talking about design lifestyle as well. And we do have a curated conversation with selected people from around the world, basically talking about their stuff. You know, it could be their businesses, it could be about their passions, it could be about their interest, anything. But I try to make sure that all those conversations really fit with Muso Trees' aesthetic, because I really need to be more, how do I say, like very directive, you know, like, okay, in this issue, we're talking about chemistry issues. So what are the things that we should talk about with these people? You know, it's not a very random stuff.
Okay. Can you tell me more about the inspiration and the principle behind this 5th volume, Chemistry?
Chemistry. Like I told you in the beginning, I was in science background. So to me, the chemistry when we're talking about, it's not about chemistry when we learn it at school. It's more like when you travel and how you have instantly like falling in love with that particular cities or countries, and you don't know how to convey it in a word form. You know, like you just love Paris. You just love London. It's like when you're falling in love with another person, the chemistry is there. So that's the chemistry I try to bring out in Muso Trees, the latest issue. Like, you just don't know how to say it, but you just feel it, you know? So that's the chemistry that you have developed in that particular place. It could be some rural areas in Switzerland or, you know, anywhere. So that's chemistry.
Apart from the content, Carol also pays equal attention to the design of the magazine.
Yes, content and design are equally important for Muso Trees, because I really need to be cohesive, you know. When I started Muso Trees, I really need to be very well design oriented magazine. It is not just a magazine of a glossy publication that you have on the shelf, you know. I'm not against it whatsoever, but that's just my preference. It should be this and that. So I've been working with multiple designers to ensure that I have doing the right direction for Muso Trees. So yes, to me, and also design is also a visual communication for people. When they see it, they understand, you know. So that's why I work thoroughly in terms of the design. People might see it very minimal, like we have lots of white spaces, or we call it negative spaces per se. And I have received questions like, hey, why did you waste your papers and you don't put anything on that blank white pages? And I was like, actually, it's actually meant to be that way in order to outbringing the real content of those stories, you know what I mean? So those are the thing, or the challenges that I need to tell people. Why? You know, because yeah, it might look very blank, you know. But to me, I think it's fun to hear those comments, because it might surprise you, like you have blank spaces in a magazine, you know. But it's the same, like to me, like interior, home interior, like space is also furniture. You know, you don't have to put your house with lots of furniture in order for you to feel like home, but space is also a corner, like without nothing is also the furniture of your house. So that kind of aesthetic that I try to bring in my magazine. So yeah.
But having that kind of design is also quite interesting, because I know earlier you said that you don't want Muso Trees to just appeal to the hipster and the coffee coffee enthusiasts, right?
Yeah.
But at the same time, that kind of design, that minimalist sleek design, is also sort of like something that is looked up to by these so-called hipsters, lah, right?
Yeah.
So are you, to a certain extent, indirectly succumbing to that kind of trend?
Yes. At the beginning, I am targeting those hipsters, coffee cultures, millennials, designers, web developers, you know, travelers particularly. But along the process, I wouldn't say that it's only for those people. It's actually for everyone. But some people might have a trouble or having like a different understanding about why Muso Trees is this and not that, you know? So I think because of that, it gives some sort of like a evidence, like, okay, we have this publication that actually conveying or applying this kind of format, but still appealing enough for the other people. Like, maybe our parent loves it because it could be a good trivia for their travel story when they were, you know, young, you know, and it should be something like they should collect it. So they see it as Musutris as a collectible. So they won't have every issue, because I received that kind of comment like, hey, do you have the previous issues? And we would love to buy it as a like a collection in their own library, maybe. So that's different perspective. Is also important in order to grow Musutris as a business, I guess.
Yeah. Musutris is published in KL, but it has a very global audience, right?
Yes.
And in fact, the content is also quite cosmopolitan. Walk me through the editorial process of producing a magazine for a global audience, right? Because I think the content that you have is also sourced globally. So, mm-hmm. so it means having to work with a lot of writers from all over the world, right?
Right. So when I started Musutris, I have this in mind, saying that I want Musutris to be outside Malaysia first. That's my, I would say, business model. Because I want to introduce Musutris in the world so that it is easy for me to penetrate in all other markets. That's why I started to have it in New York, in London, in Europe, basically, and then in Australia and New Zealand. Because the acceptance effect is much easier. Because the reading culture outside Malaysia is much, much more wider. And independent print internationally has been doing like for the past 10 years. So it's always easy to go out and introduce Musutris to them rather than start it here in Malaysia. Eventually, I try to engage with more local target readers. You know, that's why I have it in Kinokuniya and selected bookstores in Bangsa or Hartamas or even coffee shops around KL and Penang. So that's why I try to ensure that who reads my magazine. So eventually, okay, that's why I have to source stories from around the world as well, because those people who contributed to my country are actually a potential people who can actually share about Musutris to their own friends, families, or even they could introduce me with a bookshop in their own small town or big cities. So that's how I do my marketing strategy.
Okay. So, yeah. Yeah. Two questions. What was it like to first distribute your magazines throughout the world?
Mm-hmm.
And second, how do you work with your writers? Because they are all over the world. So I'm sure that it's also not that easy to coordinate things with them.
Right, right. Okay. The first question. Okay, currently Musutris is distributed at more than 20 countries. So how do I do it? I self-distribute them, meaning that because I'm a constant traveler, so I usually bring my magazine along together with me to just show to them about what is this Musutris is all about. And then everything becomes easy when they see the product in front of them, because they can see the quality and whatnot, and then they start order, okay, we would love to have these copies for the next issue, blah, blah, blah. So it's always thrilled to find new cities, you know, like to have Musutris available in every part of the world. Currently, I don't have a major distributor because I think at this point, my model isn't really sufficient for me to have a distributor, because we're talking about a huge chunk of money being given to the distributor and also to the stockist. So I'm not ready to go on that part just yet, but maybe in the future. So that's how I do my distribution. And secondly, actually, to be frank, those contributors are perhaps people that I met along the journey. You know, like they could be some people that I met in the coffee shop, or they could be my Airbnb host. So I see a good potential on how we could work and collaborate with them. So meaning to say that I don't have to work with the professional writers in order for me to produce a story, because I believe they too have their own story to be shared. But it's my responsibility to ensure that the quality is good enough to be published in the magazine, right? But I think it's always fun to work with a lot of people from around the world. It's a continuous process of emailing. Time zones are killing me sometimes. But I think if we do one day at a time, and then you know how to manage your Google Drive nicely for them to work in terms of the content, and then with your designers as well, I think it should be fine. You just have to have a good timeline, and deadlines are very important.
One One interesting aspect of turning your passion into your vocation is that sometimes the line between the two becomes a bit blurry, and what you enjoy before this can suddenly feel like a chore because it's now quote-unquote work. So if we were to look at it from Carol's perspective, does he now see traveling as work? Does he feel the need to travel just for the sake of gathering content for his magazine?
I still work the way I used to work because I don't go travel for the sake of doing most of the trains. I go travel and have fun, see the world, take as much pictures as you want, write diary or journals as much as you want to, and then you come back and then you see whether this could be a potential story for the next issue. So it makes my flexibility job much more, I would say, the creative freedom is all your hand, you know. So I don't want to restrict it, because to me, when you have a definitive, like, okay, I have to go to Singapore to produce this content and then it should be about 1,000 words, blah, 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 and you have to take pictures, maybe more than 20 pictures, you know, it makes your job more, I would say, constricted and formatted. I'm not saying it's not good, it's just it limits your creativeness. Because the reason why I started Musu, because I just want to go out and travel and try to share what I love about that place, you know. So I try to keep it that way. So just go out, travel, and come back. But eventually, it becomes a work when you have collaboration with any international people per se. Okay, they invited you to come to these places and you have to talk about this and that. But if it is a good brand, I would love, because that's how I grow Musu Trace, with a collaborative work with different brands. Because to me, community makes it more cohesive for Musu Trace to grow. So yeah, it depends.
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting perspective that I feel like a lot of people, especially in this line of work, sometimes feel as well, right? When what you enjoy suddenly becomes your work, then there is that fine line between, oh, enjoying it for the sake of enjoying it, and enjoying it, but at the same time thinking about, this can be a good feature for my magazine as well, right?
So, but still, you have to create the fine line in between that, because if you don't have that, you might feel, I would say, more obligated to do rather than you want to do it for the sake of your magazine, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's sometimes it's hard, even for myself, because I work from home, you know. If you want to treat your home as an office, but at the same time you want to live and sleep and eat in the house, it's always a hard process for me, because you have to be diligent and disciplined to work at home from these hours, and you just have to focus. And then at the same time, you want to treat your house like watching Netflix, so it doesn't feel right, you know what I mean? So but I think you just have to have a good discipline and a good fine line in between that. The same goes with travel. Some people say when you travel for work, the fun isn't there, you know, it feels different, you know. But to me, my travel is my work, so either way it works for me, you know. So yeah, I think it's my privilege and I'm being blessed to be able to experience those things.
Yeah, like we said earlier, Musu Trace is a very cosmopolitan magazine, right? And it talks about places outside of KL more than places in KL Malaysia. Or in Malaysia, right?
Yes.
So I understand that you do eventually want to make it more appealing across all cultures and all classes, I guess, to a certain extent.
Right.
But for now, do you think that it appeals only to a certain niche audience?
Well, the audience is growing. That's one thing that I can say. It's growing towards different types of people. It's still niche because in terms of, even if you look at it, it's a very niche product. Like, not everyone could see it as a magazine or a book, you know, or is it like just a photo book stories, you know? So I'm still learning on how to grow the audience and the readers, you know. But I have a plan to grow Musu Trace even further in terms of travel line, for example, like perhaps being stocked in boutique hotels in Malaysia or in the world, you know? Because the way I see it, Musu Trace is suitable more for boutique hotel line rather than a luxury or 5-star hotel, you know? That's how I see it to grow. So yeah, maybe that's my future plans.
Okay, and then apart from the content side of things, you also have Musu Trace Inventory, right? Where you, I think, select and promote small local businesses, especially in Malaysia.
Yeah.
So how does it work and why do you go down this route?
I call it Musu Trace Inventory. It's actually my personal favorite brand of Malaysian brand. That's how I try to inject a Malaysian content in my magazine, because most of the stories and interviews are worldwide content globally. So in order for me to have a Malaysian accent into it, I try to take another angle, which is try to introduce our own Malaysian brands in Musutris, because I think it's a win-win situation, because Musutris is being read by the worldwide readers. You know, to have them know about our existence, about that brand in Malaysia, it's kind of like a good exposure as well. So that's why I try to take a slight different perspective and angle. And those brands that I feature in Musutris are independent brand. So it, again, really very design-oriented as well. So that's why it makes sense for Musutris.
Mm. So having travelled far and wide and, you know, experienced a lot of other countries, how has this made you reflect on our own capital city?
Okay. I would say that Malaysian food are still the best, because as cliche as it sounds, when you are abroad for quite some time, you miss nasi lemak. That is now, it makes me more understand about why that we try to say, oh, Malaysia has a good food, you know. Now I can understand. Before this, I might like, okay, pasta is nice. But when you go out and then you miss that kind of thing, you give more values to your own cultures, you know, your own capital city, you know, not as much on the traffic though, but still, Los Angeles is still bad at the traffic. You know, I mean, I pretty much feel the same when I was in Los Angeles, because the traffic is really bad, you know, like in KL or in Jakarta, you know, it depends on how you try to absorb those, you know, experience. But either way, KL is a great city. Yeah.
While he is used to travelling, publishing Musutris is a slightly different kind of journey that Carol is currently experiencing. Does he feel like he has grown a lot as a person since the first volume?
As a person, yeah. I would say, yeah. I've learned so much through my travel in terms of how I value my life and how you want to give purpose to your life and how you see things differently and how you should treat another people nicely and how you shouldn't be saying things that, you know, rude, you know, that kind of stuff. Like, as a human, people should be respecting each other regardless what kind of job they are. So it makes me feel like we should treat people nicely. That's the only thing that I could say. And some of the little things that I noticed, like I stopped to give pedestrians way first rather than you go across the line, that kind of thing, because those little things make me feel like it's important, actually. It certainly has taught me to be a better person, you know? Mm. So, yeah.
Yeah, and in terms of the independent publishing scene, 5 volumes so far,
yeah.
What have you learned from your experience?
A lot of technical process, a lot of business growth as well. How do I manage in terms of marketing? I have never thought that I would love marketing as much. Now that I'm in it, I think it's a very powerful and mysterious way of doing things and to engage people. And yeah.
All right. So what's next for Musutris after this, you know?
I'm currently working on the 6th volume. Inshallah, it will be released in March. And then I have some few special projects as well that I am currently focusing on. Still traveling, but more like a special edition. Maybe I could have like a special edition of Malaysia, of Musutris, you know what I mean? So we'll see about that. If anyone wants to fund me, who knows? Because it's very expensive business. Anyway, so yeah.
All right. Okay, so where can our listeners find Musutris if they're interested? They're available only in selected bookstores so far, right?
Yes, they are available at selected bookstores in Kinokuniya, and we have a snack food in Bangsa, we have in Ilaika in PJ, we have Menoplus in Penang. But for more further details, you could find it on our website at musutris.com. Or alternatively, you can buy online through the website.
You You've been tuning in to I Love KL, and this week we're joined by Carol Izzuan, Editor-in-Chief of Musso Trees, a self-published magazine that celebrates the wonders of travel. And that's all we have for this week's episode of I Love KL. If you miss any part of the show, you can check out the podcast at bfm.my/ilovekl or download our app via Google Play or the App Store. We're also available on Spotify, so do check us out on that platform. And don't forget to also follow the station on Twitter at BFM Radio. My name is Hanif Baharuddin, and you have been tuning in to I Love KL, bringing you closer to the people and places of our capital city. Join us again next week at our new time slot, Thursdays at 9 p.m, only on BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.